This is an RNZ podcast.
26 minutes to 10 it is here on RNZ National. And speaking of fun, hello Hayden Donnell.
Kia ora, Emil. Wow, you think this is going to be fun?
Well, it's always enjoyable sitting in a room with you and talking about things, Hayden.
I wish the feeling was mutual.
Here we go. There it is. What's that? 12 seconds in. All right, how are we starting tonight? Well, the presidential debate.
Kind of have to start with the presidential debate. It's the breaking news of the moment. It's a topic of conversation. And from a media perspective, the big challenge with these debates involving Donald Trump is his propensity to be, to put it a bit euphemistically, economical with the truth. His factual inaccuracies, outright lies on occasion, they can come with such intensity and frequency, it can be hard to keep tabs on them in real time. And news moderators, news organizations have often been accused of basically just letting him go with mistruths and misinformation. And this debate was notable for at least a couple of times, including some concise instant fact checks. Because you don't want the moderators just weighing in all the time and trying to sort of correct the candidates. But when you know that they're saying something that's particularly wrong, this is what happened. They stepped in to correct the record. So this was one of them, and it came after Donald Trump repeated a debunked conspiracy theory about immigrants eating dogs in Springfield, Ohio.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country. And it's a shame. As far as rallies are concerned, as far as the reason they go is they like what I say. They want to bring our country back. They want to make America great again. It's a very simple phrase, make America great again. She's destroying this country, and if she becomes president, this country doesn't have a chance of success. Not only success, we'll end up being Venezuela on steroids.
I just want to clarify here, you bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there have been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say here, this is the
people on television say my dog was taken and used for food.
Okay, so that fact check, that was David Muir, the ABC debate moderator, there stepping in where Trump was talking about how they're eating the dogs. There were others, though, on Trump's claims that Democrats want to allow people to, what he said was, execute newborn babies. You had moderator Lindsey Harris stepping in to clarify that there isn't a single state where that's legal. He also said crime was out of control, and Harris again, she noted that the FBI says that violent crime is trending down. So it was just these kind of instant fact checks that came in on some pertinent points, which I thought was actually quite helpful.
Were there any especially unhinged moments from your point of view?
Well, that dog eating thing, that was pretty up there, wasn't it, Amir? Was that your number one? I actually think that is probably number one. It's the one that's got the most talk, that provoked the most conversation.
I mean, we did have an American presidential candidate saying in Springfield they're eating the dogs.
Yeah, that's pretty intense, you'd have to say. I don't think that's been said before at a presidential debate.
I don't think so either.
Like, text in on 2101 if I have forgotten.
There is a Simpsons episode where someone eats a chocolate dog. But
it's actually quite concerning how much the US is starting to, or has been resembling the Simpsons for some time.
Well, they predicted President Trump.
They did, and the golden elevator, what is it? All that stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff. We've gone over it before. That wasn't the only thing, though. I was really struck by this particular passage.
Now she wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens that are in prison.
What? Huh? That's like a sort of Mad Libs of Trump talking points there. Now, that one was
Transgender operations on illegal aliens
in prison.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's... Now, to give him a bit of credit here, there is, like, it's based in a sliver of truth, this one. Not, I mean, that way of saying it, no, but she did once affirm the rights of transgender prisoners to receive care in a survey that was sent out by the American Civil Liberties Union. So there's a basis for it, but as with all of these things, it's kind of been exaggerated and then had illegal aliens put into it. I don't know where they came from. It's just like he was kind of mashing up a whole bunch of talking points into one thing. It's kind of a very difficult task moderating a Trump debate, and it was a particularly, what's the word for it? Fiery one is the one that the media has come up with.
Well, it was energetic.
Energetic.
Compared to the last one.
Yes, it was. And it was the other word, I mean, fiery. Everyone's always saying it's fiery. I find the way that we describe these a little bit strange. Like, it's not quite reflecting the actual reality of what took place if you watch the debate. Yes, they sparred. Yes, it was fiery. But it was also relatively unhinged at times and often totally without factual basis. And that's not really conveyed in the news coverage, which really seeks out this kind of neutral tone. Right?
Yeah, well, especially the presentation, the ABC presentation. I thought the moderators did relatively well. It's a hard thing to do.
I thought they did really well, but even then, it's this kind of thing where they were so polite and so officious. And thank you, President Trump. He would be saying something like, they're eating dogs! She's going to kill everyone in this country! And they would say, thank you, President Trump, and now to you. It's kind of like if you're hosting a dinner party and you're going, how do you do, good sir? And to a person that's kind of chucking the food against the wall and weighing on the furniture. It's sort of a weird sort of mishmash of vibes there, where the media is desperately wanting this candidate to almost be something other than what he is. They want him to be more cogent and they want him to be more coherent. And this has actually got a term for it now. They're calling this sane washing. This is what Parker...
Sane washing.
Sane washing. It's what Parker Malloy, the media commentator, has termed it as. So if you looked at Trump in this debate, if you've just been consuming the AP or the New York Times or something, you've probably got a different impression of Trump almost than what you saw on the TV there. Because what they do is they take his rally speeches where he might cobble together a whole bunch of often very incoherent points. It doesn't almost make sense, some of his speech, if you actually see it written out, and they will just sort of distill it into themes and portray it as being more coherent than it actually was. And this is what Parker Malloy means by sane washing. So I saw the New York Times headline about this debate: fierce exchanges over country's future dominate debate. That's the most bland way of putting what actually... I mean, it's true.
It's
technically true, but it doesn't really actually convey the reality of the situation. So this is something Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic also talked about this, and he said this is how sane washing works. So Trump sounds nuts, but he can't be nuts because he's a presumptive nominee for president of a major party, and no major party would nominate someone who's nuts. Therefore, it's our responsibility to sand down his rhetoric, to identify any kernel of meaning, to make light of his bizarro statements, to rationalise. So that's what they think is the media's kind of...
Catch-22.
Issue here. Because, and I've been going on a bit, but sometimes when someone is so unusual, it can seem like a pejorative. It can seem like you're not being neutral and objective when you actually accurately describe what they're saying. And so that is really where I think some media... some political reporters struggle with Trump in particular.
We've been talking almost entirely about Trump so far. What did you make of Kamala Harris's performance in this debate?
She seemed like, at the very beginning, I thought it was going to be pretty tight because Trump was kind of on message. I'm getting into political commentary here. She seemed very nervous, but it seemed that once she started realizing that she could rankle him by putting him off with minor points about like his crowd sizes at his rallies, and he'd just focus on that if she mentioned that and not talk about the substantive point, She became much more comfortable and he sort of got distracted and knocked off balance. This is not a very original thing, but this is sort of...
Well, nonetheless. It never seemed like that.
Yeah. And so she had a strong performance in that sense. It was tactically quite strong, I think, even if she didn't always express herself perfectly or up to what standard she might want.
I have been complaining during the show today about a thing that I saw a lot of during this debate and that I see a lot of from politicians of all political stripes, of... having a question asked of you and then instantly throwing that question away, disregarding, you know, hearing the question, taking the question, balling it up like a piece of paper, throwing it in the rubbish bin, vaguely reframing it to something that you would like to talk about and then talking at length about that, which I find I find this really annoying, and I feel like this happens everywhere with New Zealand politics.
It happens in New Zealand politics. Yeah. There was an episode of The House about it recently as well, where they said that basically Tama Pōtaka had failed by not doing that and actually kind of addressing the actual question asked to him was, are you worried that some children are going to be homeless as a result of that? Yep. And he said, no, I'm not worried that they'll be homeless. And he was faulted for addressing the question directly in a way that could be misinterpreted by headline writers. But it is funny that politicians are, well, when they address a question directly in an inelegant way, they're immediately blasted for it.
And I think that's
that's what they do. They just go on to their message, their pre-existing talking points.
Yeah. The people would have, you know, would on the other side of that say a lot of journalists would pluck a line out of context where a question asked and blow that up out of proportion and so on and so
forth. It's so unsafe for politicians in the current media environment to, especially where you can clip a video so quickly, like 5 seconds out of context, that they just, I think they feel very unsafe going off message. And it's a very skillful person that can get away from the talking points. Kamala Harris did it tonight. She always went back to her own background. That was obviously a tactic. She wanted to talk about how she grew up in a working class family. And Trump just completely ignored the question and talked about illegal immigrants and dogs and such. That was probably in response to a question about the economy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is from that. And there are two more presidential debates between now and election day in the US. So I'm sure there will be a lot of coverage of them too. Let's move on. You wanted to talk as well about media coverage of Al McPherson's claim to have treated her cancer with natural remedies.
Yes, this was an interview in the Australian Women's Weekly. It also published a book excerpt, and Al McPherson said, well, she revealed that she was diagnosed with breast cancer 7 years ago. The issue is that she says she rejected conventional medicine, and she attributes her recovery to 7 months in the Arizona desert with a doctor of naturopathy. How do you say that?
Naturopathy? Naturopathy? It's a naturopath, aren't
naturopath, you? Naturopath, yeah. Naturopathy. A holistic dentist.
A holistic dentist?
Now, that is a job title. I have not heard of that one before. I have to say, what does a holistic dentist do? So not just teeth, but the brains spirit on top of the teeth.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm. Yep. A holistic dentist, that would seem to be everything. Not just teeth, but everything. That's just a doctor. Anyway, osteopath, chiropractor, two therapists.
Wow, that's quite a contingent, isn't it?
Yeah, not everyone has access to all of that.
I mean, people are entitled to you know, elect to follow a natural remedy course for their illnesses.
Yeah, it's not like it's a problem per se. The thing to note with McPherson, though, is that she attributes her recovery to these natural remedies, but she actually did, this wasn't actually given prominent mention, but she actually underwent a lumpectomy, which is of course a conventional treatment, and it could be that her recovery is actually due to the conventional treatment that she received for breast cancer rather than necessarily the 7 months in the desert. But perhaps the thing that's really annoyed some people is the way that she reframes her recovery as kind of the result of a great mindset, and this is where it gets a bit actually problematic. She says, the body has infinite capacity to heal and I am in utter wellness. Fear is something that can really make you ill, so I'm not interested in that. And I just thought it's notable, Rebecca Wadey, who has survived breast cancer, she's a writer for Ensemble, and she has written about it for them. Now, it's in my most hated format, the open letter. It's in the form of an open letter. I've railed against open letters, but nevertheless, this is a good open letter. It is a worthwhile read.
And I'm guessing she feels that Al McPherson's statements are ill-informed, disrespectful to people with cancer?
Just the insinuation that...
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily that she's saying that they had a bad mindset, but her attributing her recovery to her good mindset insinuates that people don't have a good enough mindset, and that's maybe why they don't recover. And this is what's really offended Rebecca Wadey, and she says, "Are you blaming those who die from it for not willing themselves into remission? Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, you call it utter wellness." Now, it's a very sarcastic piece, and another line from it. It seems like the body is missing the brain.
Gee.
Oy. And P.S. you're in the worst season of Friends. That's another harsh zinger from Rebecca Wadey's
Gee, hit her where it hurts. I mean, besides being insensitive to people who get cancer, the issue here, I suppose, is that it's actually quite dangerous if people do start rejecting mainstream treatments on the advice of a celebrity. Not that Al McPherson was necessarily saying, if you want to be freed of, you know, if you want to get better from cancer, use...
She is the owner of a wellness company, and it's certainly the insinuation that this is the way that you should treat it. Now, she said it was a difficult decision, at least, and she did acknowledge she went through a lumpectomy. But yes, I would say that people reading that she cured cancer with this stuff might think this might be a way for me to cure cancer. You know, it is advice in that sense. And that's the point that Rebecca Wadey makes, that she's kind of encouraging people to ignore tools that might save their lives, because that's what McPherson did. She didn't go through, normally you'd go through radiotherapy after this. And now this is where I get into media commentary a bit here, because I thought Stuff's initial reporting on this, which was headlined "Al McPherson Reveals Secret Cancer Diagnosis in New Book," it was a very short story, but I thought it was pretty irresponsible, I have to say.
Go on.
And as a disclaimer, I'll admit that it is pretty rough to come down hard on the story. It's obviously just a write-off from the Australian Women's Weekly's reporting. It's most likely done in a huge hurry to harvest a few clicks. There's basically no journalism involved, to the extent I'm surprised there's a byline on it at all. But it is such a sensitive topic with such a profound influence on people's lives that it really felt like it should have included some kind of comment from someone with expertise. And instead, it really was just a write-off of McPherson's claims. They were made, no context, no pushback. It does note that she underwent a lumpectomy, but it essentially says she's made a tough decision to treat her cancer with holistic medicine. Now she's in remission.
Right.
And there's no outside perspective, there's no rebuttal to that claim. And I really thought that on this topic, where you're making a controversial claim about a very important thing that people are making profound decisions about their lives on, that you would include some opposing information from someone with expertise.
So maybe a follow-up looking at the veracity or adding to this wider story is in order?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually what Stuff did a couple of days later, when its health reporter Hannah Martin actually got to the story. But this was just a quick duty write-off, and Hannah Martin's coverage much more comprehensive. It gives context on the diagnosis, delivers comment from medical experts. Good story. Better late than never. I thought the first one probably should have been Hannah Martin's one rather than what it actually was. Now, there were also notable fact checks from RNZ and TVNZ Breakfast, but yeah, it wasn't all good.
These write-offs from other media are pretty common, all things considered, though, aren't they?
Yeah, we're always doing them, the Herald and Stuff. If someone else has a good story, you will often just go, "Oh, do a matcher on that," is what we called it when we're at the Herald, which is just basically where you take their reporting. Sometimes you didn't even link to them. Often you will link to them and just write their story as your own. I kind of think they are problematic. I totally get the reason for doing them. It's basically a very low effort way to get clicks, and they can goose your figures, and you have to sell those figures to advertisers. I get it. It's tough times for the media, but also you're taking on the risk of somebody else's reporting, often with far more comprehensive checks where they've reported it.
Yeah, right.
Or you don't know what checks I've done, actually. Yeah. And you're taking that risk on for yourself. And often it is really low quality stuff as well. It's lazy. And I find bylining it also quite weird, because you've basically done no journalism of your own. And is it plagiarism?
I don't know. It would feel weird, but at the same time, I mean, as you see before, this is commonplace match stories, and this applies to news as well, right? You know, a thing has happened in an area. A news director might send
the BBC
a reporter down
has
there
it.
And
we yeah. need it. We yeah. don't have someone over there.
Exactly.
We've got to write it. Our readers deserve to know. Mm-hmm. But when when this is original reporting that's done by someone else because of their access to a person and you're just writing off, it's probably not plagiarism because you're not just copying them directly, but yeah. It's a bit weird. It's in the kind of grey area, I think. You're not doing the work and you're taking advantage of someone else's work. And actually, media kind of hate that when Facebook does it or something.
I think it's especially objectionable when a story is paywalled and then a journalist from another organisation might go and take the content of that paywalled story and then write it up for free. I think that I'm not a fan of that at all. That would happen quite a lot to newsroom stories when I worked for Newsroom on the Detail, and it used to rankle me, I have to say.
Yeah, but then the argument for them is, look, if they do link back to you,
exactly,
they have to link back. That's the problem.
And it's a fair point too, yeah.
But then you might get more subscribers to your actual paywalled story, okay. But hey.
All right, let's talk about the Broadcasting Standards Authority, because there have been a few interesting rulings this week. The first involves some radio hosts and a Reddit post.
Yeah, Fletch Vaughan and Haley on ZM, they irresponsibly promoted alcohol according to a BSA decision. Now, they read out a Reddit post which was about the highest alcohol percentage for the least amount of bucks. So it's basically, yeah, it's not great, is it? It's sort of encouraging binge drinking there. How drunk can you get for the least money, basically? Uh-huh. And they were like, one of them said, I'm not going to drink if I'm not going to get drunk. And so that's not great. And NZME actually upheld complaints over this. NZME obviously owns ZM. They didn't broadcast a public apology, though, and the BSA, they deemed that that was insufficient and ordered them to broadcast a summary of its decision just so that people knew that this was wrong.
So, I mean, it does seem like an irresponsible thing to do, but they've been told to correct
it. Straighten up their ideas.
Yeah, any issues with that decision?
I don't have an issue with that decision. I think they probably did deserve to get pinged. It was absolutely irresponsible to do that. And the only thing that I wanted to note about this is that they weren't actually making up their own content here. They were reading out content that was actually posted by another multi-billion dollar corporation that has apparently no responsibility for the content that gets posted on it. And no one's even making an insinuation that Reddit should be responsible for that post, but that was a post that originated out of Reddit, which has a lot more money than Fletch, Vaughan and Haley or ZM or NZME, and a much greater reach, and that post was read by thousands of people on there.
Probably less responsive to BSA orders.
Well, absolutely. There's absolutely no regulatory framework, very famously, for these social media companies, and they're allowed to post things that cause great harm with basic impunity. Now, their argument is, of course, that they are not publishers like ZM or NZME. Mm. They are a platform. They're just there for sharing. Of course, that's not quite right, because they're making editorial decisions all the time, banning subreddits. They have rules about what content that can be posted and can't. And also, they have a lot of money to be moderating. Now, it's just an interesting situation, right? We had some laws that were proposed to deal with this to some extent. There was going to be a one-stop shop that was going to replace the BSA and the Media Council. It would have actually policed these internet providers and been able to fine them if they did post objectionable stuff that caused harm. It was scrapped by the new government under Brooke Van Velden, Internal Affairs Minister. And it just got me thinking along those lines, because why aren't we saying that actually Reddit has a responsibility here? Why is it just NZME, particularly in the current environment where these media companies are losing money and their reach is going down and they're held to higher standards than the companies that are basically replacing them?
I remember when Spotify gave the Joe Rogan podcast, bought the Joe Rogan podcast exclusive rights to that, and some of the episodes of that contained mis- and disinformation were taken down as well, but Spotify also arguing that because it was just a platform rather than a publisher, it didn't.
Yes, and this is the eternal debate, yeah. And you will see media companies and people like Sinead Boucher argue, it was the height of it when the March 15 massacre was posted live on Facebook, right? These companies are posting content and they're not putting enough into moderation and they're not taking responsibility. And Sinead Boucher will argue they should be called publishers, just like she is and Stuff is. And actually, they're not just platforms because they're making publisher decisions all the time.
We have about a minute left. We probably don't have time to talk about the clip, but there was another BSA ruling about a kind of amped up report of a political poll by TVNZ.
You might remember this one. It was Mikey Sherman's first poll as the One News political editor, and it was bad for the coalition government, and she reported in what...
Buckle up.
It's going to melt your face off. Coalition government is dropping. And look, that's what the way these polls are always done, to be honest. But Chris Luxon called it frothy, and there were complaints about it to the BSA. Now, the BSA has rejected those complaints, and TVNZ did too. And it was essentially on the grounds, if I just had to summarise it in less than a minute, that this was analysis, and poll analysis is pretty commonplace. And people do expect a little bit of entertainment value, and Mikey Sherman's entitled to her personal style.
Which is an interesting ruling, and that term analysis is doing a lot of heavy
lifting. I mashed up TVNZ's response and the BSA's response there, so just FYI, some of that was from TVNZ. Don't come for me, BSA. But yes, it was rejected on the grounds of that it was analysis and opinion, which the fairness, accuracy, balance standards doesn't apply to.